I'm Jesse Ventura. Stay vigilant and question more. Welcome to my world. Come along for the ride. The world according to Jesse.
Hi, I'm Jimmy Dore, sitting in for Jesse Ventura, who is still on vacation. Today, we talk about two Boeing plane crashes and the evolution of artificial intelligence.
The world according to Jesse.
Hi, welcome to the show. I'm Brigida Santos. Again, for those who are asking, Jesse will be back next week. In March, an Ethiopian Airlines flight crashed, killing all 157 passengers on board. It was the second deadly crash in 5 months involving a Boeing 737 MAX 8 airplane. Now, the first crash took place last October when a Lion Air flight killed 189 passengers off the coast of Indonesia. Investigators are still looking into both crashes, but the circumstances behind them are similar. Both planes crashed minutes after takeoff. In each case, the planes struggled to gain altitude, ascending and descending several times before the pilots lost control. It's too early to say with any certainty, Jimmy, where the blame lies, but do you think they're going to find a link? Because this doesn't really seem like a coincidence.
Yeah, of course there's a link between what happened. What's actually happening is they put these engines on these jets that were supposed to be more fuel efficient. Well, they're heavier than originally thought, and so what happened is it screwed up the center of gravity on these planes. So they had to institute this artificial intelligence program to adjust for that, right? Well, it's not working. And not only that, is they're not telling the pilots about how it's working or how it should work or how what they should do when it kicks in. So are they going to find a link? Yes. And it's not a coincidence.
At the time of taping, the FAA had temporarily grounded Boeing's newest airliner, but reports indicate that the model could be back up and running after a simple software update. This is not an iPhone, Jimmy. We're talking about planes that can and have killed hundreds of people. What's the government going to have to do to ensure that this never happens again?
Well, part of this is what the government already did to make sure it did happen. I don't know if the people know, but, you know, we've been cutting back on government and certainly cutting back on the inspections that the government is supposed to be doing of new aircraft. And so what they've done is they've let the aircraft makers themselves certify their own planes. So that's what happened in this case with Boeing, and that's a big problem. So we need to actually put more money into our regulatory agencies that regulate air travel, and so they can actually do their job. They're not doing their job now, and in fact, they're farming it out to the same contractors that they're supposed to be regulating, and you see how well that works.
Artificial intelligence-powered software has largely resulted in planes being able to fly themselves, except during takeoff and landing. But more automation means less hands-on flying experience for pilots. In 2011, a federal task force found that pilots had trouble manually flying a plane or handling automated controls in 60% of accidents that it had studied. Jimmy, that's terrifying. Pilots are forgetting how to fly. If they spend less time actually flying planes and more time interfacing with software, don't airlines need to update pilot training programs and also require them to go back to the basics?
You would think, but again, that will probably cost someone money, so they'll probably won't do it. That's what, you know, what it seems like to me is they should have a pilot in every cockpit who's the specialist on the software of the airplane, and then they should have a pilot on the airplane that actually is trained to fly the airplane. Because if a lot of people don't know that the crash in October, the exact same scenario happened the night before on the exact same plane, but it was with a different crew, and one of the pilots who happened to be just sitting in the cockpit, he wasn't even flying, he knew how to handle this situation, so he told the other pilots what to do. And so maybe we put a guy in the cockpit that's actually trained to fly these planes and deal with the emergencies that we know are going to come up. Yeah, of course they're not trained as well as they should be, and of course, because that all costs money. Again, the regulatory bodies in the United States that are supposed to make sure those people are trained adequately and set the safety standards, they're underfunded. That's the problem.
Yeah, and the other problem is there's a lack of competition. We've talked about this in a previous episode regarding the airlines, how when there isn't any competition, customers are forced to fly on planes that they know are unsafe or fly with airlines that treat customers poorly.
Correct.
All right, a survey conducted this year by the Edelman AI Center of Expertise and the World Economic Forum found that 54% of American technology executives and 60% of the general American population believe that regulating AI is necessary for safety. A third of respondents said AI-powered deepfake videos could lead to an information war and, in turn, a shooting war. And a majority of respondents said they worry that AI will decrease human intellectual capabilities and reduce human-to-human interaction, which increases isolation. Despite the public's concerns and the concerns of technology creators, AI is widely unregulated. What do you think about the findings of this study?
I think the findings of the study revealed that there's a lot of anxiety in not only the general public, but in the experts who work in this field of AI. So, yeah, it definitely... needs regulation, thought about how we go forward with this. What are the benefits? What are the costs? What are the potential dangers? And what should we be thinking about that we're not even thinking about? So that's what this survey tells me, that people are on edge about it.
All right, AI is already capable of creating fake faces and putting those faces in fake scenarios through deepfakes. How is this going to affect how people perceive information in the future? Are we not going to trust everything we see?
No, I think that's all. You're already seeing that, right? So yeah, this new tech job, they already have fake faces that you can put on yourself when you go out in public that look just like someone else's face. It's amazing. So no one's going to be able to trust this going forward anyway, because people are going to be able to fake it. It'll be interesting to see how it plays out. Especially with facial recognition technology.
Stephen Hawking warned the world about the potential consequences of AI, but the technology quite literally gave him a voice.
You said that mankind was in danger of destroying ourselves by our greed and stupidity. Have things gotten better or worse since then?
We certainly have not become less greedy or less stupid. 6 years ago, I was warning about pollution and overcrowding. They have gotten worse since then. The population has grown by 500 million since our last meeting, with no end in sight.
Hawking wasn't a complete alarmist, though, about AI, as articles quoting him would have us believe. In fact, he often called for more research and stated that certain types of AI systems could actually help end wars, poverty, and disease. So it's not all bad when it comes to AI. You know, the technology is already improving medicine and other fields. What good things do you hope is going to happen with this technology?
Well, I'm still waiting for my jetpack. I was promised a jetpack 30 years ago, and we never got them. So that would be nice if we got those jetpacks. I'm still waiting, but they say again. I'm not a scientist, but what they say is that artificial intelligence can help end wars. It can help end poverty on big scales, and of course, it can make great advancements in medicine. So. That's what I hope that technology can accomplish going forward. And they've already figured out how to cure baldness, so I think we've got the big things under control.
All right, even though AI isn't all bad, Elon Musk did say that it poses the biggest existential threat to humanity. Agree or disagree?
Well, I'll go with the guy who's smarter than me. The problem isn't that... See, people are afraid, like, they're going to invent a robot that kills you, and they can. Well, that's really not the big worry. Is that the system designed will work exactly as it's designed to work, right? So, right now, artificial intelligence works on what they call, I think it's called small intelligence, right, or small learning. So it can figure out a task, like a robot can place a bolt here or do this or get it. But what happens when they start to become like super smart? And like you say, hey, car, get me to, I saw this example in an article I read, hey, car, get me to the airport as fast as possible. Well, does that mean it's going to run over some other people? Does it mean it's going to cut through a park? So you got to be careful that the real worry is that these artificial intelligence systems will work perfectly. That's the real fear.
Yeah, and unfortunately, systems are not as sexy as robots, so people aren't going to care as much until it's possibly too late.
Right. So all you don't need to invent robots to kill people. All you need is an internet hookup.
And an algorithm.
Correct.
All right. Well, AI is coming. We're not going to be able to stop it. What kind of regulations need to be implemented to make sure that my life gets better with AI, not worse?
You know, that's a really good question. I'm really not sure. You know, of course we need regulations. Look what they're doing with driving cars, right? So they keep saying there's a driving car. It's going to work. And I like how they even put a person in the car. Like, we still need to have a person in the car. Well, if you have a person in the car, just have them drive it. I don't know what to do. To me, that's kind of funny.
Or it's
and
like
then,
the plane.
Of course, there's
you need someone there.
Right? And of course, you have a person in the car and they still crash. And then the person's like, oh, bad car.
Yeah.
It's kind of funny. So they keep saying that artificial intelligence is going to get rid of all these manual jobs like drivers. And I honestly don't think that's going to happen. People like drivers. I would rather get it. I don't think that's ever going to happen. And all it's going to take is for one truck to run into a school bus, and that's it. And that's going to happen. So, I mean, I don't know if it's going to run into a school bus, but it's going to run into some traffic, or it's going to go off the side of a bridge, or it's going to kill some people, and that's going to be the end of that.
All right, it's time for a break. When we return, Jimmy sits down with author Martin Ford to talk about the evolution of artificial intelligence and robotics.
The world according to Jesse.
Something for you on your Sports HQ.
Redacted Tonight is a comedy news show that is not defanged by the corporate media. We can go after the corporations that destroy our lives, profit over people at every turn.
Redacted Tonight for me is like medicine. It's like an antidote from all the stress that the news puts you under.
Redacted Tonight is a show where you can go to cry from laughing about the stuff that's going on in the world as opposed to just regular crying.
We're going to find out what the corporate mainstream media is not telling you about, and we're going to filter it through some satirical comedic lenses to make it more digestible. That's what we do every week. Hard-hitting, radical comedy news like Redacted Tonight is where it's at.
I'm Jesse Ventura. Stay vigilant. Question more. Welcome to my world. Come along for the ride. The world according to Jesse.
Artificial intelligence is rapidly transitioning from the realm of science fiction to the reality of our daily lives. Here to discuss the evolution of artificial intelligence is New York Times bestselling author Martin Ford. Hi, Martin. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Now, how sophisticated is artificial intelligence right now?
Well, it's accomplishing some amazing things. I mean, we've got machines, of course, that can recognize images better than people. They're translating language. You know, we've got self-driving cars. So these are all amazing developments. But at the same time, artificial intelligence is not like you would see in a science fiction movie. It's not human-level intelligence. It's not machines that are truly thinking. That's still pretty far in the future.
Oh, okay. Well, can you talk about the regulations or rules that are imposed on artificial intelligence and how it's used?
Well, it's used in lots of ways. There aren't right now any general rules about artificial intelligence. I mean, that's one of the debates that's happening. And in my recent book, I talked to a lot of the top researchers in the field. And what most of them say is that we definitely need to regulate applications of artificial intelligence. So, for example, when AI is used in medicine to diagnose patients, we need to regulate that, of course. When it's used in self-driving cars, of course, we need to regulate that. I mean, we regulate regular cars and trucks, right? So, of course, we're also going to regulate self-driving cars. But most people are against the idea of having some big picture regulation of the entire field or restricting the research or things like that. Because, you know, this is a very, very important technology that's going to bring enormous benefits to us. So we don't want to really hold it back.
Now, you've spoken with many architects of artificial intelligence and robotics. What are some of the most consequential innovations you've seen so far, good or troubling?
Well, I think the most consequential innovation overall is going to be the application of artificial intelligence to science and to medicine, to developing new technologies. It's going to become an enormously powerful tool to help us solve some of the biggest problems we face, things like climate change and diseases and so forth. And you already see companies doing this. Companies like DeepMind in London, for example, are using their technology in these ways. But it's also being applied in other, you know, less, you know, optimistic ways. In China, they're using artificial intelligence to really build a surveillance state where everyone is all the time watched and tracked, and the government knows absolutely everything that you're doing, and they're even going to build a kind of a social ranking system based on this.
What? That's very similar to what's happening in the United States, correct?
Well, I think they're taking it a little further. To some extent, you can argue that, but nothing like what they have in China. I was just in the United Arab Emirates and was told a story about someone that dropped a ring, and a couple hours later, someone else came along and picked that ring up, and they were able to identify that person based on facial recognition, and a couple hours later, the police showed up at her house. So, I mean, it can become very, very extensive and intrusive. And we'll get some of that in the U.S. and in the West more generally, but that's a decision that we're going to have to make in terms of the trade-off between being safe and secure and having less crime and so forth and really having these systems watch us all the time. But it's going to be an important debate for us.
Yeah, I think that debate's already been lost by the civil libertarians. We live in a surveillance state. The government collects every email, every phone call you make, and text. They have it, and they're not kidding around. And it's unconstitutional. It's illegal. We're living in a totalitarian state right now. In case anybody didn't know, I just want to let everybody know that the United States is a authoritarian surveillance state. Okay. Did anyone that you spoke with raise ethical or moral concerns about the technology they were developing?
Sure. Everyone is concerned about the ethics of these technologies in the field. I mean, there are a number of issues that have arisen. Artificial intelligence is a very, very broad-based technology. It's going to be applied all over the place in many, many different areas. So, of course, there are going to be ethical issues that arise. Just to give one example, in some cases, it's been documented that some of the algorithms used to make decisions have been biased, in some cases based on gender or race, for example. And this has come up, for example, with the algorithms used to screen resumes that big companies use in their hiring process. That's been shown to happen, and so people are working on fixing that. Other areas, as we just talked about privacy, I really wouldn't go quite as far as you would in terms of the situation in the United States, but it is clearly an issue. It is something that is going to be important for public debate in terms of how much surveillance we really want in terms of our daily lives. The use of artificial intelligence in weapons and in military applications is another area that is very fraught right now, with many people having very strong opinions on both sides of that. And it's an issue that is not ethically clear, because, you know, those kinds of systems can be used to kill, but they can also, without question, save lives. So in many cases, these are very difficult questions to answer, and I think it's going to be very important to have that discussion publicly and bring these issues to the forefront.
Well, the United States had a system of monitoring its citizens that wasn't an invasion of their privacy. It was called FinThread, and it was invented by Bill Binney, the top codebreaker at the NSA at the time. They got rid of that program that did it constitutionally and protected Americans' identities, and they got rid of that, and they instituted a new program that is unconstitutional and that totally reveals the identity and the privacy of U.S. citizens, and they did that for money. And then they tried to throw Bill Binney in jail. because he outed their corruption. So the government's completely corrupt here when it comes to surveillance in the United States. But let's move on. The Pentagon recently released a blueprint for how to quickly inject artificial intelligence into military equipment. What do you think the military will use machine learning for? I mean, are we talking about killer robots?
I think the military use it all over the place, and now use it for some things that are directly related to combat, and that might ultimately include, as you say, killer robots or robots that operate autonomously. Right now, the United States military has said they're not planning to do that. I don't know if that will always be true. It's possible that at some point the competitive dynamic between countries may just make it impossible to hold to that promise. But machine learning and artificial intelligence are going to be used in many other areas as well, and they're going to be used in ways that make operations more efficient. They're going to be used certainly in ways that save lives, not just kill people. But to give one example, one area where it's very likely to be used would be in the targeting systems that are used with drones, for example. And the advantage of doing that is that you end up shooting at the people that you intend to shoot at, and you don't end up killing or hurting innocent people, right? I mean, if you look at the weapons used in the military today, I mean, they've made enormous progress from, say, World War II, where it used to be the case that whole cities were bombed indiscriminately, and there was a massive, you know, collateral damage. You know, innocent civilians and even children were killed en masse. The situation is very different today, and that is it is different because of technology, because of the march of technology has made that possible. Artificial intelligence and machine learning will take that even further and make it possible to use these weapons in a much more precise way that results in fewer innocent people being harmed. So I think overall that's a good thing. I don't think that's something that we should say is evil or immoral. In fact, it's just the opposite. But these are very complex issues for sure, and people have very strong opinions.
So now they keep saying that pretty soon they're going to replace everybody working at restaurants with robots. Now, I get that artificial intelligence is going to undoubtedly change the workforce and many industries, but how many human jobs do you estimate are at risk of being replaced by robots, and which jobs are most likely to disappear, do you think?
Well, the jobs most likely to disappear are the ones that are, you know, fundamentally routine, repetitive, and predictable. So if you come to work and you do the same kinds of things again and again, it doesn't have to be exactly rote repetitive, but you're facing the same kinds of challenges. You tend to make the same kinds of decisions and do the same kinds of actions. And that's probably a job that ultimately could be automated. And it might be a blue-collar job where you're manipulating things with your hands, or it might be more of a white-collar job where you're sitting in front of a computer, maybe manipulating data in some way, or writing the same report again and again. All of that is going to definitely be susceptible to automation. Now, there have been a number of estimates that have looked at this, and most of them come away with pretty big percentages, anywhere from 40 to 50% of jobs. Maybe in the next 20 years or so, could be susceptible to automation. That means they could be automated. It doesn't mean that they will be. But any way you look at it, we're talking about pretty big numbers over the coming decades. I mean, and you know, whether it turns out to be 20% or 40% or even 15%, those are all huge numbers that would be enormously disruptive to the job market, to the whole economy, to society. So I think it is an issue that we really need to take seriously. We need to be prepared for this coming disruption to the job market.
So now artificial intelligence can already produce videos and photos of fake people and events. Now, how can we maintain a grasp on reality as these technologies become more sophisticated?
That's a really important question, and it's something I worry about quite a lot. There's an area known as deep fakes. And the word deep comes from deep learning, which is the most advanced form of machine learning that we have right now. And this is going to make it possible in the future to make, for example, audio recordings or even videos of people saying whatever you want them to say. So, for example, you could take a prominent politician and create an audio recording of that person saying something that would be, you know, self-destructive. You know, it might be racism or any other kinds of other things that could be used to really just totally destroy someone's reputation. And the thing is that these recordings ultimately could be put out there, And it might be very difficult. Someday it might be nearly impossible to tell if these are fakes or these are real, because they'll be so high fidelity. And so you can imagine the kind of damage that you could do to individuals and really to the whole political process by creating these completely fake, untrue videos or audio of people saying things or doing things and putting it out there, and they go viral and there would be a massive reaction, and then it might only be sometime later, perhaps days later or even a week later, that we could show definitively that these were in fact fakes. We could have all kinds of people doing all kinds of really nefarious things with this technology. So it's a real concern.
Martin, I really appreciate you taking time and sharing your expertise with us, but we're out of time.
All right, well, thanks a lot for having me.
The world according to Jesse.
Let's turn to the viewers. We asked people on social media, in what ways has artificial intelligence improved our lives, and how do you think it will benefit from it in the future? William says, it should only be used when necessary. The key word here is artificial. When it gets to the point that we can't tell whether it's real or artificial, we're in trouble.
Yeah, I would agree. You can't tell if it's real or artificial. Used when necessary. I mean, is it really? I mean, we use artificial intelligence when it's not necessary all the time. I just bought a coffee cup that has an app with it. So I think we're getting I have a toothbrush that comes with an app. My toothbrush comes with an app. I think I can brush my teeth without artificial intelligence. Thanks.
All right, Stephen says, we'll benefit from AI through cars that avoid accidents, which we just talked about.
Yeah, okay. Again, I don't think that'll ever work, but I'm not a scientist. I mean, I think even if it works 99.9% of the time, that 1% or whatever, that 0.1%, when it kills a busload of people, there's your problem.
Right. All right, Jimmy, I just want to thank you for filling in for Jesse while he was in Mexico this winter. It's been an absolute pleasure. I'm definitely going to miss you. We'd love to have you back soon.
It was my pleasure sitting in for one of my favorite patriots, Jesse Ventura, and thanks for all your help. And I want everybody to remember that when the government lies, the truth becomes a traitor, so stay vigilant.
The world according to Jesse.